Stuart Davis's jazz-inspired paintings perfectly capture the spirit of 20th century American popular culture, combining elements of advertising design, abstraction, and realism. The Whitney Museum of American Art is currently hosting an exhibition of his work called Stuart Davis in Full Swing that spans his career from the 1920s until his death in 1964. It was organized with the National Gallery of Art in Washington, and it's on view here at the Whitney until September 25th. I'm pleased to welcome Barbara Haskell, the exhibition's co-curator and co-author of the accompanying catalog, back to our show.
Thank you. It's good
to see you again. Is it fitting that the Whitney is hosting the show, since Stuart Davis had a relationship with the Whitney Museum from the early days of his career, which were also the early days of the museum?
Yeah, it actually is. He was one of the founders of the Whitney Studio Club. Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney gave him a stipend that led to the famous breakout work, the Egg Beater Pictures. She funded his trip to Paris and then over the years would buy pictures in order to help him pay his rent or pay hospital bills. So indeed, it is very fitting.
And was it where he had his first show?
Yes, he had his first show at the Whitney Studio Club. Absolutely.
How many of his works are in the Whitney's permanent collection?
We have 12 works in the collection. And 4 of them are in the current exhibition.
What happened to the other 8?
The others are, some of them are earlier. Some of them are pieces that we decided didn't quite tell the story that we were trying to tell in the exhibition.
You were trying to tell a story, not just give us a retrospective?
Well, we began with Davis's mature works in 1920, the Tobacco series. And one of the interesting things about the show, Davis has always been considered a bridge figure between early American modernism and something that came after the war. And in the show, half of the show is after 1950. And I think one of the fresh ideas about Davis that comes through is that he's a great post-war figure.
Where did he come from? Were any members of his family artists?
Absolutely. It's a fascinating question. Both of his parents were artists, and he left high school at age 16 and became a member of Robert Henri's school.
That used to be called the Ashcan School.
Exactly, the Ashcan School. But he studied with Henri, and he was a budding star within that group until the Armory Show happened.
Was his early work realistic?
Yeah, very realistic. Very much like the Ashcan images, you know, street scenes, sort of narrative scenes of life in New York. He was already had begun hanging out in African American saloons. Was fascinated by jazz and ragtime playing.
And then you say the Armory Show, which introduced him to European modernism.
That's right. And one of the interesting thing is that having joined the Henri group, this 16-year-old confronting this charismatic teacher, that he understood and accepted Henri's idea that art had to relate to life, that it had to somehow be give insight into shared experiences. That when he saw the Armory Show, he recalibrated his response to Henri's painting and began to think of it as having too much emphasis on subject matter, not enough on formal qualities. And he decided to be a modern artist at that point, 1913. But he never lost his commitment to life, to art as a reflection of life. And so his sort of genius, as it were, was to merge those two things, to create abstraction that suggested the exuberance and cacophony and spirit of modern everyday life.
And obviously he flirted with cubism, but never really became a full-fledged
cubist.
That's
right. That's right. He used the vocabulary to create something very American.
The earliest paintings in the show are still lifes of common household items, light bulbs, mouthwash bottles, cigarette packs, and the like. Was he just painting what was around or using them as excuses to refine his technique and style?
Well, there was that. He used them as, springboards to experiment with cubism and various European modernist styles. But there were two things. One, he chose things that were distinctly American. So he chose tobacco pictures that were associated with America. Lucky Strike, Bull Durham was the cigarettes that were distributed to soldiers in World War I. And then he chose products that also had a very distinctive American cast. So Mosden Edison light bulbs, for example. So he wanted to be both American and modern. And he talked about, at one point he said, I too feel the thing Walt Whitman felt, and I want to present it in my art.
Unlike other modern American modern artists who went to Europe, and like Marcin Hartley or Stanton McDonald Wright or a whole bunch of others who just started painting like European modernists. He, by putting Lucky Strike in a painting, he's saying, I am an American. He's also saying something about advertising, which is interesting because I wonder whether people like Andy Warhol are direct descendants.
Well, in a way they are. I think he was the first artist.
Yes,
exactly. He was the first artist who really saw advertising as a dominant aspect of modern life, the sort of bold graphics and single impact of advertising. And when looking at the show, looking at his work, the artist that really comes to mind is Roy Lichtenstein. Mm-hmm. There's so many visual comparisons between a work that Davis did in the 20s or 30s, 40s, and what Lichtenstein did decades later.
You have a group of his egg beater paintings from 1927, 1928. What are they, and why are they so significant in the development of his style?
Well, they were the first time that he really embraced total abstraction. So as he described it, it was thanks to Gertrude Vanbrugh Whitney, he had a stipend that allowed him to just focus on his art. And he, working in a tiny, what he called a closet for a studio, he collected an egg beater, rubber gloves, and a fan. And he began to draw them. And as he described it, over the course of the year, they lost their sense of objecthood and became just abstract planes for him, set at angles to one another. And that was a vocabulary that then he retained for really the rest of his life, that idea of distilling a subject into geometric planes that were set at angles.
I'm speaking with Barbara Haskell, who is co-curator of an exhibit and now at the Whitney called Stuart Davis in Full Swing. It runs until September 25th. He did go to Paris eventually, 1928, right before the Depression. You have a selection of his works from that trip. What kind of influence did that have on him?
Well,
who did he see? Who did he meet?
When he went to Paris, he was right after the Egg Beater series. And so, interestingly enough, although the Paris works have a kind of candy palette and a lyricism that wasn't true of the Egg Beater pictures, they retained that formal vocabulary of flat planes set at angles to one another.
Was he meeting people like Picasso?
He met Leger, interestingly enough.
And well, I could see that.
Exactly. And actually, years later, when he was applying for a Guggenheim Fellowship, he inadvertently or subconsciously noted on the application that he had studied with Leger in Paris. And when he finally got the Guggenheim grant after many, many tries, he said that it was, he apologized and said it was really a sense of how important Leger was at that point to him and to American art.
Then came the Depression, and he seemed to get involved in politics.
Absolutely.
Did he give up art for a time?
Well, he started, his production declined. At one point he said, in kind of reminiscing about that period, he said lots of meetings, lots of articles, lots of debates, lots of work done, but very little painting. So it was a time when his production decreased. He was very involved in politics, head of the president of the Artist Union. He was the editor of Art Front, the journal of the Artist Union. He was very involved in the formation of the American Artist Congress, eventually its president. He really believed that, in the idea of artists coming together to work for the financial security of artists.
And then came the WPA. Is that when he started painting the murals?
Yes, absolutely. The Museum of Modern Art had a show of murals, which they had in 1932 as a way to encourage, hopefully, architects and designers to commission American artists to make murals. And Davis did a couple of murals. He did a mural for Radio City Music Hall that Donald Deske commissioned. And then the great breakthrough mural was Swing Landscape that he did for the WPA. And then
Were they political?
They weren't. No, they weren't. He really believed that his art had a political edge just because it was abstract. He believed that the democratic approach to art that he had was an example of what freedom is.
He also painted a painting for WMIC.
A fantastic mural that is filled with identifiable images of saxophones and radio antennas and notes, very much in keeping with the idea that his affection for jazz, that there was something about the rhythm and the swing and the speed of jazz that was similar, parallel to his own work.
He seemed to change with at the beginning of every decade.
Absolutely.
Was that a conscious thing?
No, it just a happenstance. But you're right. That next big change was in 1950.
The work becomes very complex.
It becomes very complex. It becomes the shapes become a little bit more expansive. The color gets brighter. And it's at that point that it begins to add words that are abstract, words that aren't clues to the painting meaning, but give a sense, as he said, of the human aspect. So they really begin to suggest advertising, but totally abstract.
I got a little confused here. The paintings in the 40s became more complex.
Yes, and
then
absolutely.
The 50s, they simplified.
Yes.
Our listeners may know one of his most famous paintings from that time called Champion.
Yeah, that was the breakthrough picture. So he did that in 1951. That was one that was actually based on a matchbook cover for Champion spark plugs. So he took the word Champion and blazed it on his canvas almost as if it's a billboard. And then
in complementary colors, red and green.
Absolutely.
So that it really
flashes.
It just
pops out. And he's also working with color, very involved in the way color either recedes or advances, so that there's a speed that he begins to introduce because of the color. The work just kind of pops back and forth.
The title of the show is In Full Swing, and his work is always described as being inspired by jazz. How much was it?
Well, I don't think it was so much.
Because he doesn't feel improvisational.
No, it totally isn't. It's very methodical, the way he goes, his working process. I think he saw jazz as a parallel expression. He thought it was an American expression that captured the new mood of modernity, the new lights and speeds and sounds of modern life. And that and his paintings were both something that expressed what he felt was the social role of art, which is to create order out of the chaos and cacophony of life.
And you include the last canvas he painted, which has an interesting story.
Very poignant. He had begun to have heart trouble in the late 50s, early 60s, but working at just top of his game, as they say.
And was he, at this point, was he a celebrated artist? Considered one of our greats?
Yes. Beginning by the mid-50s, he's starting to be recognized. He's 1948. He's identified as the fourth most important artist in America by Look magazine. He has
I wonder who the other three were.
Well, actually, John Maron is number one. Kuniyoshi was in the mix. Davis represented America in the Venice Biennale in 52. He had a retrospective in 57. So he's beginning to be seen as an elder statesman.
And then that painting.
And then the painting. So he'd been working on the painting. It still had the tape marks that he used when he was, trying to isolate areas and really finalize the shapes and the colors. Still had the tape on it. He and his wife saw a French film. He was rumored to have, he always kept a couple of televisions on in his studio with the sound off and radios going. So this kind of cacophony that he incorporated in his work. But they watched a French film, and before he went to bed, he put the words fin, F-I-N, which had ended the film. He put that on his canvas.
And it was his last film.
He died that night on the way to the hospital.
And unfortunately, he came to real prominence just as the abstract expressionists were coming along. So although I think by now he's considered one of the greatest artists America's ever produced, he was already being slightly overshadowed by these exciting young artists.
He was, although it's interesting. He really, he went to all their shows. He was still friends with people like de Kooning. In his diaries, calendars, he would write down his impressions of the shows. Many of them he really responded to and applauded. He didn't like their subjectivity. He believed that art had to have it had to deal with objective subject matter. And that was really his objection to the abstract expressionists.
We have a few of his paintings posted on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. The show Stuart Davis's work, Stuart Davis in Full Swing, runs at the Whitney until September 25th, and then it'll be traveling to the National Gallery in Washington?
That's right.
And has a fabulous catalog, which was also co-written by my guest, Barbara Haskell, who is the co-curator of the show. It's always a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.